Welcome to the Engineering Influence Podcast presented by the American Council of Engineering Companies. Mergers and acquisitions is a frequent topic on the podcast, as well as among engineering firm leaders. One of the emerging themes has been the influx of private equity firms into the industry. To talk with us about private equity today is Mick Morrissey, Managing Principal of Morrissey Goodale, a specialized management consulting and research firm serving the architecture, engineering, and environmental consulting industries. So Mick, anything we should know about private equity before we get into this?
Yeah, Jerry, thanks. And before we kick off, as you know, we are big fans of the pod at Morrissey Goodale. Love the work that you do. Yeah, I think it's worthwhile starting today with some definitions and distinctions to provide some context for the discussion for our listeners. First of all private equity is not created equally, nor is it all private equity, believe it or not. I think private equity has become a catch-all phrase for two distinct types of investors in the engineering industry. The first set of investors can legitimately be called private equity. These are groups that, by definition, are investing funds raised from outside investors or limited partners, as they're called. The second set of investors is family offices. These are firms that are investing exclusively on behalf of a specific, very wealthy family. They typically do not raise money from outside investors and thus have a lot more flexibility in terms of hold times. And I think that distinction is important, and we'll get into that later on. Both private equity groups and family offices are now very active investors in our industry. Some private equity firms and family offices are relatively small, with just hundreds of millions in their funds to invest, while others are much larger, with billions in their funds. And as such, some are suited or better suited for smaller firms in our industry, and others are better suited for larger, more iconic engineering brands.
So you mentioned size there, and just to sort of hit off on that, for a private equity firm, what is the bottom size that would be acceptable?
So that continues to evolve, Jerry, and it's actually getting smaller. Traditionally, private equity has entered our industry with a platform that's generating north of $5 million in EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, an accounting term that equates to free cash flow. But what we have seen, certainly since 2016, is private equity and our family offices acquiring smaller firms, some as small as $1 million in EBITDA, and combining them with other firms, then bringing them together and rebranding them around a platform. So the size has changed and continues to evolve. And then, as we'll speak a little bit about later, I believe, it all depends what the entry point is in the industry, whether it is a large platform through a recapitalization or whether it is smaller tuck-in or add-on acquisitions that the private equity-backed engineering firm makes as it grows and evolves.
So what's the reason, what's behind this interest? Is it sudden? Is it new? Or has this been going on just under the radar?
Well, certainly the answer there, I think, is threefold. You know, first, in general, there's just an increasing influence of private equity in the larger economy. Private equity's net asset value has grown more than sevenfold since 2002, twice as fast as global public entities or equities. U.S. private equity-backed companies have doubled from 4,000 to 8,000 from 2006 to 2017. So the first answer is just that private equity is much more influential in the overall economy. So it's not unexpected that we would see it in our industry. So why specifically are we seeing it in our industry? First of all, is infrastructure globally. Not just here in the US, but in the world, infrastructure will require significant investment for rehabilitation and for new infrastructure. Much of that will come from the private capital markets. Public markets the public sector won't be able to do that all by themselves. So private equity has a role in the infrastructure space in general. And that's another reason why they're interested in consulting engineering firms. Third, very specifically for our industry, we're a highly attractive industry for private equity. As an industry, we tend to underperform in terms of return on equity, return on assets, return on investment. So private equity can, with very little leverage, bring better business acumen to grow the business and get much better results and returns than traditional engineering firm management teams can. That might be a little tough for us to hear as engineers, but it's pretty much the fact of the matter. Also, as a mature, highly fragmented industry, we provide a great opportunity for private equity to grow through add-on acquisitions so they can scale up their original investment. And this is something that private equity is very, very good at. They're good at making acquisitions. They're good at sizing up investments, pricing those investments and acquisitions in a very thoughtful manner. And then they're able to do multiple of those acquisitions in a way that is much better than we as engineers can do as management teams. And that last point is particularly important for private equity. The investment thesis for private equity is that as a firm grows in size, its valuation increases. So as an engineering firm grows in size, the larger it gets, the more valuable it becomes. So the model is to invest at a certain multiple of earnings at the initial size, then grow the business via acquisitions and organic means, improve performance along the way, and then exit out of the business by selling to another firm. Oftentimes, Jerry, these days, it's to another private equity-backed firm or to a private equity fund, or go public and realize a return on their investment at that time when they exit, in addition to making money along the way. So that's really why there's this interest. And I will say, Jerry, there's been a real acceleration of private equity into the engineering space recently. So private equity deals have increased over fourfold in our industry since 2013. In 2013, we tracked just 18 private equity-backed acquisitions or recapitalizations. Last year, 2020, that number jumped to 83. So over the same period, the percentage of deals with private equity involvement has doubled from 13% to 27%. And in this first quarter of 2021, private equity or family offices have been involved in 1 in 3 of all transactions this year. And this year, Jerry, we have reached the milestone of 100 deals in our industry faster than any other time on record. So not only is consolidation increasing in our industry, the role of private equity in that consolidation is increasing. I also think it's interesting if you look at who's been doing all the buying in the industry. Since 2018, 5 of the top 7 most prolific acquirers in our industry have been backed by either private equity or family offices. Private equity is now quite simply the biggest driver of recapitalization of our industry.
What type of firms are they looking for?
We see a trend where both private equity groups and family offices are looking at the establishment of multiple businesses or platforms in the larger AE industry. So an emerging model is a private equity fund or a family office establishing an engineering platform through the acquisition or recapitalization of a brand name or iconic engineering firm, an environmental services platform, and very possibly a PMCM platform. Now, as your members know, there's overlap between all of those three types of firms in the industry. And what the private equity groups and family offices are doing is they're looking at building a diverse portfolio in the broader engineering space by having these different platforms that don't necessarily collaborate with each other, but also don't compete with each other, but provide the investors with diversification within this very attractive industry. What's interesting is our cousins in the architecture world have really not seen this level of interest from private equity or family offices over the last decade. And that has changed recently in the last couple of years. And we're now looking at private equity roll-ups of and family office roll-ups of architecture firms as well happening.
What about...
And I'm sorry, just to follow up on that, in terms of, so that's generally what they're looking for. In terms of individual firms, you know, the thesis for investment depends, but most investment groups are looking to invest in engineering firms that have a specific expertise. So think transportation infrastructure, think fire protection, or think development of facilities, of data centers facilities. So something that is specific, that's hard to get into, and that's got good long-term trends going forward. So oftentimes we will see the predominant investment thesis for specific firms being these defensible, niche-driven, deep dive competencies in specific areas. But that's not always the case, Jerry. We're seeing, particularly lately, a lot of PE firms that are comfortable with acquiring non-specialized engineering firms, firms that may work in the public sector or the private sector, firms that are largely regional in nature and are doing anything in a particular region, which is a fine business model, but it's not specialized. Those private equity groups are then taking those multiple non-specialized firms, which tend to be smaller, they tend to be closer to this $1 million EBITDA that we talked about at the top of the pod, and then bringing them together, rebranding them once they've achieved a certain scale that they can then build around going forward.
Are they only coming in to acquire, or are they also making strategic investments to support a firm's growth under other management?
It's both, Jerry. The chances are, if it's a larger industry firm, it's a new investment or recapitalization by private equity or a family office. For example, since 2018, private equity has been behind the recapitalization of 61% of the transactions involving an ENR top-ranked design, environmental, or PMCM firm. So you can see that when a firm is larger, And I think in the minds of our of the listeners of the pod, you know, some of those iconic brands in the industry, that's where private equity or family office will recapitalize. They'll make the investment. However, once the platform has been established by private equity or the family office, those investors will oftentimes, in fact, they typically will make a series of tuck-in or add-on acquisitions, as they're called, of smaller firms to help the platform grow along with organic improvements that they make in the business. So it's both, Jerry. It's recapitalizations and it's add-on acquisitions.
And then you made the point earlier saying that their goal is both to grow the size of the business and improve the performance of the business, sort of taking advantage on two levels of their investment.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you want to think about what they're expecting from the firms they invest in, priority 1A is to grow the business. You know, an increase in scale or size is directly tied to the increased price or value at the time of exit in the future. Priority 1B is to improve bottom line performance for the exact same reasons. There's no point in growing the business if you don't improve performance. And again, this is what private equity and or these family offices are really good at. It's their trade craft is understanding how to grow and make businesses more valuable. And when you think about it, that's not a surprise, right? This is simply what any equity investor would want: buy low and sell high, right? But on that note, I think it's important, Jerry, to note that smart family offices and PE investors work hard to make sure that management and employees are incentivized to achieve those financial results. They often do this by providing management and key employees with what is called rolled equity in the new company so that everybody benefits and everybody's on the same page. So thus management and employee owners can benefit from the initial investment by private equity, which is typically at a much better valuation than the internal valuation will be at the time of the recapitalization. And then management and key employees work in partnership with the investor to grow the business, improve performance, and then at the time of exit, get a what's called a second bite of the apple, as it were, because their rolled equity, boom, then pops at the time of exit.
I don't know if there's a general answer to this, but the sellers of the company to the private equity, do they tend to stay in or do they tend to leave?
That's a great question, and it's all over the map. It's all over the map. So one of the things that we've observed in our work with employee-owned firms in the industry is that underperforming managers or owners tend to stay around too long and be tolerated too long. And oftentimes it's because the price of paying them out is you know, the drain on cash flow is too tough. And oftentimes their legacy or historical relationships that make it harder to say to the president who's underperforming, it's time for you to move on, buddy. Not so when a private equity or family office gets involved. Private equity and family office understands what's key to this industry. It's retaining and motivating the best talent so that your clients get great service, so that you can build sustainable value going forward, and investing in technologies to allow you to be the firm to be better than the competition. In employee-owned firms, that understanding may be there, but oftentimes there may be a lack of performance on the part of either executives or key managers to make that happen. And so in the new model, when it's recapitalized by private equity, those decisions get made faster about either terminating or moving on non-performing or underperforming individuals. So depending on the quality of the management team and the leadership team, that team may stay intact and be augmented as the firm grows, and typically augmented, because if the firm is going to grow rapidly with the new investor, you know, the assumption is you're going to need to bring on more and or better management. But if the management team doesn't have all the functioning pieces that are needed or has underperforming individuals, generally private equity is pretty quick about moving them on. Not the preferred strategy, but there is an unemotional approach to dealing with those types of issues that employee-owned firms tend to have, and which tends to trip them up with those with that decision making.
Yeah, that makes sense. How long do these do the private equities stay in the firm? How long do they maintain their investment?
So that's a great question, Jerry. You know, ask any PE buyer or investor. It's remarkable. Ask any of them how long they intend to hold a particular investment or what their preferred investment timeline is, and they'll give you an aw shucks and say, you know, I don't know. We don't have any predetermined timeline for any of our investments. They'll tell you it's primarily dependent on too many factors that are unknown, including what the future market will be like or what the firm's specific issues will be like in the future. That said, typical private equity hold times, as they're known, range between 3 and 7 years. That's typically what we have seen, not only in our industry, but in other industries with private equity. Now, that said, we've seen that trend start ticking down to under 5 years with some recent recapitalizations in 2020 and 2021. And again, this is reflective of a larger trend on the part of private equity funds that, or in the broader economy, to hold on to their investments for a shorter amount of time than they had been in the previous decade or so. And again, family offices, because they're not investing for outside investors, have more flexibility. And they still tend to have much longer and are undetermined, you know, hold times as they're investing for future generations. It's not like they're not going to exit their investment, but they tend to have a lot more flexibility because they don't have limited partners or outside investors saying, now we want our money back.
So with recapitalizations and such, that suggests that the that these have been good investments for private equity?
Well, by all accounts, it's been a tremendous ride, particularly since the Great Recession for both private equity groups and family offices in our industry. Our data and our word on the street, you know, suggests that returns and multiples in this particular segment of the industry have dramatically exceeded other capital models over that time period, over the last decade. Now, most, if not all of that data is private and proprietary. But that shouldn't be surprising to us. You know, getting great returns is the business of private equity and family offices. Again, that's their craft. And this is a point I keep having to remind our clients about when they're talking with private equity groups. Engineering firm competencies are doing great engineering, not in buying and growing businesses. PE and family offices have competencies in buying and building businesses, not in engineering. It should be a very good relationship so long as both sides understand, you know, what the other side is good at. And you know, when you look at the, it's interesting. I spent the first 2 months of 2021 primarily talking with private equity groups and investors in this industry. And it's always amazing to me how private equity they hire some of the smartest people from some of the top schools. And these are, you know, the folks that come out of, they're hiring folks that are summa cum laude, right? Out of finance and, investment programs and business programs. And this is always one of the really interesting observations I have, Jerry, when we're introducing clients who are the owners and management teams of engineering firms. And these are typically folks in their 50s, right? And we're introducing them to private equity groups. Our clients are always struck by how young the folks are who are making the decisions on the other side of the table or over the last year or so on the other side of the video call, right? Oftentimes, the folks who are making the decisions about whether they'll invest in the engineering firm or not look like our clients' kids or grandkids. It's remarkable. But going back to your point, the returns have been, for the last decade, private equity groups in our industry have done really, really well as the industry has grown through the recovery and as it has grown in this superheated period, you know, through the pandemic and into 2021. When our industry profits in our industry and growth in our industry, by and large, has been off the charts, except for firms in certain segments. I would expect this to continue, you know, particularly if we see the big stimulus bill for infrastructure come into play sometime in 2021.
So it does seem that the interest of private equity, which as you've mentioned a few times, is smart money. If they're getting into the industry, it suggests good things for the industry.
I think so. It's smart. To your point, Jerry, that's a great point. It's smart money. So I think there's a fear on the part of folks who don't understand private equity that it harkens back to the days of, if you remember that book, Barbarians at the Gate, which was KKR doing leverage buyouts and the other leverage buyouts that took place in the 80s. By and large, the private equity model in our industry is not one where they burden the firm with an inordinate amount of debt and strip the assets. Private equity in our industry gets that we're a people-focused business. they recognize that our assets, well, they don't leave the office every day anymore. They just turn off their computers at home. You know, so they recognize the importance of keeping people around. So when you talk, when you review talk to private equity owned firms, when you review their business models, you'll see they invest more in training, more in development, more in benefits. They have more, you know, liberal type of flexible work environments than maybe their employee owned competitors do. They get the important fundamentals of our business. They get that the business needs to invest, that our industry needs to invest in technologies to get closer to clients and to do more with less because it's so hard to find people. And they make the investments to do that. So again, I think there's a concern on the part of many traditional engineering firm owners and managers that have this view of private equity that it's going to, it's a model that cannot work with engineering firms because it's too focused on returns and performance. And I would suggest that that is not the case overall. I would suggest that it is, it's smart money looking to build better businesses. And I think, you know, when you look at what this means for the industry overall, I think it speaks to, over the next decade, you know, the recapitalization of our industry, which we're seeing in real time happening right now. You know, since its inception, the predominant and I'd say preferred capital model in the industry has been employee ownership. You know, that model started to evolve in the 80s with the advent of some of the publicly traded firms that have grown on to become the AECOMs of the world and Jacobs of the world that we know them now. But by and large, up until the Great Recession, employee ownership was still the prevalent capital model and preferred capital model. But the traditional employee owner model is swimming upstream against some major socioeconomic trends. Employee ownership essentially depends on the transfer of wealth from younger employees, the next generation of owners, to older employees, you know, those owners that are departing a firm. And that equation has broken down due to demographics. So consider this. Millennials own just 3% of the nation's wealth. In comparison, boomers owned 21% when they were the same age. Looking at it a different way, in 1989, people under 40 owned 13% of the wealth in this country. In 2019, just before the pandemic, they owned just 6%, despite representing nearly the same share of population. So the next generation or rising leaders that employee-owned firms rely on for future leadership and capitalization are strapped. They're strapped compared to when that model was viable 10, 15, 20 plus years ago. So Jerry, while for sure, I believe, you know, engineering firms will be led by engineering managers and leaders, and that next generation will be leading them, I think they're far less likely to be leading pure traditional employee-owned engineering firms. I think it's much more likely that they will be leading firms that are a blend of private equity and some employee ownership for key folks.
Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Jerry. And again, great work on the pod. We love it.